Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
New Books in Economics, brought to you by EAEPE. The European Association for Evolutionary Political Economy.
Welcome back to New Books in Economics, part of the New Books Network. This is Andrea Bernardi from Oxford Brookes University in the UK, your host. I'm here today with one of the editors of a book recently published by Routledge in 2019. This is The Ethical Formation of Economists by Joanna Negru and Wilfred Dosma. Joanna, thanks for being here. But since the book is particularly complex and erudite and interesting, we also have a second person, a second host to discuss the book with you. This is Rodrigo Zidane, professor in finance at New York University in Shanghai. Welcome both Rodrigo and Joanna.
Thanks for being here and for inviting me to talk about our new book.
Okay, Joanna, let's start from the nature and the origin of the book. And also, please tell us your current and past affiliations.
Yes, thank you very much, Andrea. I'm a reader in economics at the Luciambaga University of Sibiu, and I have been based in UK for 16 years. I have started my academic career by doing my PhD with Nottingham Trent University, and then I have moved to Anglia Ruskin University in Cambridge. And my last 4 years in UK have been at School of Oriental and African Studies, part of the University of London. The basis of the book, there is a workshop organized by myself in Cambridge at Anglia Ruskin University in 2013 on professional economic ethics, when we have invited Professor George DeMartino to be a keynote speaker, but we have had other interesting guests such as Jamie Morgan, Craig Duckworth, Robert McMaster, Matthias Klass, and it was organized jointly with Scheme. Following this event, I have contacted Wilfred Dosma to work on an edited manuscript, and from our exchange, the focus of the book shifted slightly to the behavior of economists.
For the listeners, let me read quickly the titles of the chapters. We have the introductory chapter by you and Wilfred. Then we have chapter 2, Training the Ethical Economist. Chapter 3, Teaching Future Economists. Chapter 4, Economists' Personal Responsibility and Ethics. Chapter 5, Social Connection and the Responsible Economist. Chapter 6, More Harm Than Benefit, the Ramifications of the Neglect of Rights in Economics. Chapter 7, Experiments in Economics and Their Ethical Dimensions, the Case of Developing Countries. Chapter 8, The Making of an Ethical Econometrician. Chapter 9, Economists, Their Role and Influence in the Media. Chapter 10, Intervention, Policy and Responsibility, Economics as Over-Engineered Expertise. Finally, Conclusions, Raising Up Private Maxiu. Rodrigo, do you have any preliminary question for Joanna?
This is a fascinating book. And my first question is, you do understand that many people think that economists think of themselves as scientists, and you tackle this normative problem of economists having an underlying ideology throughout the book. And my question to you is, what do you see the role of the economist today as a public figure from your work in the book, your work with these main authors, Has anything changed in your perception of the role of economists in the world today?
Thank you very much for the such an interesting and complex question. I think I agree with you that economists take a very positive view of economics, and we in the book disagree with the distinction between positive and normative economics, because we think it's not advancing any good and progressive economics, and we try to advance a more conception of the economic science. I think Balding stated in a famous piece that no science of any kind can be divorced from ethical considerations. So we disagree with this scientific and scientist view of mainstream economics throughout the book. The book, I think, concludes with a simple but essential idea that economics needs ethics, not just institutionally, but as in the formation of characters of economists, so not just institutional but at personal level. And I think this is one of the key insights that informed me and convinced me that we might at least need to consider the importance of a code of ethics for economists. So from my work with all the authors, I think I have somehow deepened my ideas about ethics, which is a new addition to my interests, my research interests, and also convinced me that we need some institutional reform as well as personal reform at the level of economists. I'm not sure if I've answered the question.
You certainly did. I would be interested in what is this proposed institutional reforms. What are these reforms that you believe would advance economic science?
Yes, I think we agree with George DeMartino that economists need and with Deirdre McCloskey as well, their brilliant work following the Economist Code from 2011 and then 2016, the Oxford Handbook of Professional Economic Ethics. Where they try to advance a new subdiscipline and to put the foundations of a new subdiscipline in economics on the professional economic ethics. So we also think that some kind of codes of conduct might be useful, but we need to think very carefully and very nuanced about whether they'll be voluntary or not, whether they can somehow ensure that economists follow some basic rules when it comes to conflicts of interest and other ethical dilemmas when it comes to policy making.
Okay, if I may go back to the introduction of the book, you refer to three major ethical frameworks in economics, and this is utilitarianism, deontology, and virtue ethics. If you could tell something about this to the listeners, and what is the role of this classification in this edited collection of chapters?
Yes, thank you very much. I think all economists operate in all these three frameworks, and I think they are very important in many ways, because economists have been criticized that they cannot advance or they do not have a conceptual space for ethics. And whilst we agree partly with this, I think that we have also sympathy for the fact that even the mainstream economics has a legitimate ethical framework, which is that of consequentialism or utilitarianism. Utilitarianism is looking at or putting at the basis the principle of utility, following the classical work of Jeremy Bentham and John Stuart Mill. And the right action means an action that increases the happiness for all the parties involved. So a follower of utilitarianism is someone that is trying to maximize the value of the universe. And is, as I said, the dominant ethical framework within economics. In general, the authors of the book have been critical in engaging with utilitarianism, and they've tried to advance solutions to either improve it or, such as Mark Wright, trying to consider rights as well as utility within economics, but also criticizing and putting forward other frameworks like deontology or virtue ethics. Deontology is basically the ethics of economists as professionals, and they look at the concept of duty and the right actions performed by by ethical and rational individuals. He's trying to universalize actions and tries to forward the idea that actions should not violate the freedom of other individuals. Deontology has been criticized on many grounds, but in principles that the duties might give rise to harm and to harm other parties. But of course, what we contend is that if individuals can somehow self-assume morality and moral actions, this might counteract the idea of duties and obligations which arises from the deontological framework. Virtue ethics is basically an Aristotelian philosophy, and it tries to forward the idea of individual formation and following virtues within the social context or social institutions and social social life and society forms individual in an ethical way. Again, the virtue ethics framework has been criticized on the fact that circumstances shape action, and this is from Jonathan White. But basically, I think we cannot separate character from moral action many of the times. I think in general, heterodox economists are much more open to deontology and virtue ethics, and I think the book is about professional economic ethics, which is a form of deontology. So that features more within within the book.
In the book, you refer to movements such as Rethinking Economics, which in Europe and elsewhere, also through the contribution of students, supported the attempt to redesign the curricula of economics in a more progressive and pluralist way. How effective this has been, and what could be the contribution of your book in this debate?
I think this is a very important question. Thank you very much. Rethinking Economics has been a brilliant movement, and we have admired the students and how well organized they have been in pushing forward a few things when it comes to reforming economics. And the main contribution was the changes that they've made to the curriculum within UK, in many universities in UK, and they have pushed for publication of books, organizing conferences, organizing events, trying to pursue the change in the curriculum. And I think the book here fits very nicely with their aim of training and teaching economists more moral and political philosophy and ethics. A number of chapters in the book advance this idea that one of the solutions, and probably the most important solution, is training economists in ethics at both at undergraduate and postgraduate levels. So I think Rethinking Economics is trying now to move not just towards reforming university education, but also education at A-level economics in UK, which is, I think is a brilliant move and is quite necessary for putting the basis of a pluralist economics in young minds, which will then continue maybe with university education.
But now let me surprise my guest with a question to Rodrigo, which is in fact the author of a textbook, a handbook of business and economics. So my question for Joanna was, how should we reform curricula and textbooks? And what about your textbook? Is it fit for purpose?
My textbook is for non-economists. And it's called Economics of Global Business. It was published by MIT Press last year, November of 2018. And in the same vein as Joanna, I do agree that we need to improve how economists think about social problems, especially to disentangle this normative and positive part. And I try to do that in the book by focusing on, for instance, on what policymakers actually do instead of what they ought to do. I would like to pose a question to Joanna in these instances. okay, the rethinking economics movement and everything, they do propose a new way of thinking about economics. What is less clear to me is, what is the end goal? What is the purpose? Is it just to improve the teaching of economics? Because, and again, it comes from disentangling the role of ideology to the role of positive science. What is expected to achieve? That economists arrive all at a different conclusion than we do it today? Is it about taking into account other views? I do agree with everything you say, but at the end of the day, the rethinking economics movement, and I'm looking at the book, it's a shame that we don't teach philosophy in economics anymore. But here's the thing: what's gonna happen? What do you think is gonna happen once we teach economics with a more ethics based? What do you think is gonna be the end result of this process that you are very importantly proposing to move forward?
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like: no fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
The students have been very well organized in terms of also publishing various books which advance a pluralist kind of economics. So one of the things that they have asked within their manifesto, and also in the ICIPE letter, the International Students Initiative for Prism in Economics, was that economics is becoming more pluralistic at level of theory and method and methodological level. This is very, very important, because if we do not have a recognition of the schools of thought in economics, if we don't have a recognition of the methods, of the diversity of methods that exist, I think we cannot have a progressive economics. I personally hope that the students will carry on with these activities, and they'll continue to be very well organized. And not just, I think we shouldn't diminish the importance of education, because I think this is a tool that we have where we can produce change. And I think this is what they're hoping to achieve, a more pluralistic and a more progressive economics. So I do think that what they do is very valuable. And unfortunately, the movement is not very present in Romania, for instance, which I would like to see more. The interesting thing that has brought out as well this movement is that we recognize what is the only common point that heterodox economists have with mainstream economists, and that is pluralism in teaching. So as far as the mainstream economists would go, would be to recognize that we need some pluralism in teaching, and they will agree with the introduction of a history of economic thought module on the curriculum. But what we also need, we need to teach, as your last part of the question was asking, we need to have ethics on the curriculum, both at undergraduate and postgraduate level. And we hope that this will produce economists which are more informed about what it means to be responsible in policy making, in policy advice. And without education, I don't think we can succeed.
A simple question: what should you take out of the curriculum? Because we understand about opportunity costs, and I agree that ethics should be in, but the difficult question is, what should be out?
That's a very tricky question, because sometimes we don't necessarily have to take out subjects. I think I agree with you. The curriculum is very dense, and sometimes it's difficult to make space for a course in moral and political philosophy or in ethics for economists. But I'm not sure how to respond what we should take out, because I think everything is important. It's important to teach economists into specialisms, into, for instance, things like development economics or behavioral economics. We also ought to have econometrics. We should have also a course in research methods, but also something along the lines of ethics or moral and political philosophy. It's difficult to say what I would take out. It depends probably from local case to local case what you would take out, but it's very difficult to answer this.
Well, if you ask me, I would answer about management curricula, and I think that is a big problem here. In particular, there is no economics, economic history, for example, in management curricula, and so I would happily put some economics or history of economic history, and I would remove something that is, I think, unsuitable for undergraduate students. And this is, for example, a very large presence of entrepreneurship and cross-cultural and leadership and cool management modules that I'm not sure are a good undergraduate option for bachelor students. But let me go back to your actual book. And I have a question related to chapter 9. Because being here in a podcast, we should be interested in chapter 9, which is economists, their role and influence in the media. You also mentioned earlier the policy part of our job, and that chapter describes that in different nations, the policy role of economists varies. For example, if you look at the United States or if you look at the Netherlands, there are different connotations of being an applied economist, a policy economist. So what's the media task for economists, and what is the relationship between our media engagement and ethics?
That's a very good question. I think basically economists, I mean, the author Wim Grote and Henrietta Maassen van den Brink are trying to argue that most economists are probably not engaging enough with the media. And they also argue that for most economists, the general result is pure oblivion. We are not cited enough by our peers. Maybe success would mean that we are cited maybe at least 10 times by other authors. This is very, very interesting in terms of the indexes that are used in many universities to look at citations and so on. But in terms of the ethics and the media, I think economists should have also some kind of rules of engagement with the media. And I think in the latest years, especially the crisis has shown that we haven't engaged enough with the media. I think ethical capabilities of economists have been put under question because of the fact that we have left ethics for the policymakers. So I think there is much more scope for engagement with the media and for a public role that economists should have. There is a nice collection edited by Daniel Klein on what economists should do, with sketches from various economists like Ronald Coase, Theodore McCloskey, Friedrich Hayek, and they all talk about the importance of the economists to be more engaged with the public and to try to serve more society. So there is a lot of scope for economists to have, not just to leave ethics for the policymakers, but assume a more critical role when it comes to the media and to their activities, academic activities, I think.
I have a question now for both, which is still talking about engagement with media and the lay audience. Since the crisis in particular, and since the latest great recession, and since the rise of populism around the world,
we have a problem, which is that it's very easy for politicians to disagree with the experts, to disagree with the economists in this case, and to argue that the politician and a parliament or the people taking a decision in the electoral ballot should be free to ignore the suggestions, the recommendations of experts and economists in particular. I don't know, the debate on Brexit, 99.9% of economists said in 2016 that Brexit would be a failure, and still nobody was particularly interested in this judgment, and still this is happening today. You argue that economists should be more engaged, but it is also true that in the age of populism, disengagement is more difficult. So how should economists react to this difficult environment?
I think, again, some valid points about the role of experts. And INET has run a series with various economists talking about the role of experts. And three students from the Rethinking Economics have been written a book on experts and the role of experts in economics. And the fact that the crisis has brought out, because of the failure to predict the crisis, a lack of trust in the experts, a lack of trust in economists. So I do think that it's more difficult for economists now to get the trust back. One interesting example is, because we were talking about codes very briefly at the beginning, is the banker's oath in Holland, which is from 2013-14, I think 87,000 employees in the banking system in Netherlands is basically taking this oath to comply with certain rules, to be loyal to the customers, to the clients, which I think it's trying to restore trust. Thus, the arguments that a professional economic code for economists would restore the trust in the profession from the public. So I think this is quite an interesting idea. But the failure to predict the crisis, I think, also raises an interesting question. Economics is predicated on a philosophy of science that I think is very obsolete and very old-fashioned, which is based on prediction. And prediction very rarely works because of uncertainty. And maybe we need to rethink also the scientific basis on which economics is found.
Rodrigo?
I disagree a little bit with Joanna just on the role of prediction, because I actually do not know of almost any economist who works in predicting anything. We do analyze stuff in different ways, but the argument continues, her arguments continue to hold, and they are still very good, regardless of that point or not. I do not know the answer to that question. If I knew the answer to the question, we wouldn't have Bolsonaro in Brazil or Donald Trump in the US. I don't think we're going to get the trust back. I think the world is going to get more and more fragmented. And I do not think that economists' lack of trust is particularly special. As you mentioned, it's not exceptional in any way, shape, or form. You see that in anti-vaccination campaigns, into GMO issues. You see that lack of trust in medical science, like vaccination. We took it to zero.
Yes.
And now we have these problems again. So I do not think is necessarily the problem of economists, and I have absolutely no clue how to take any kind of trust back. If I knew, maybe I would get a Nobel Prize in a peace prize, right? Because that is, whoever solves this issue is going to get, is going to be the most important person of our times.
I find a bit peculiar the proposal of this book, this idea of the oath of the economist. But since you are here, please, can you tell us what this chapter is about? How could this work? And also, what is the difference between duty of care, duty and duty not to harm, and the duty of care that in chapter 2, I think, is described?
Yes. Chapter 2 looks at economists' ethics and engages a lot with George DeMartino's Economist Oath, written in 2011. And George DeMartino comes with, again, an institutional solution and tries to argue that economists should swear an oath in the same way that the doctors swear the Hippocratic Oath. This chapter two, written by Andrew Meerman and Robert McMaster, engage also with George DeMartino and argues that beyond the prudential and precautionary principle that he is advancing, and also suggests that economists need not just to do no harm, but to also exercise a duty of care. And what does it mean? It's almost a difference between negative and positive freedom, in a way, if I can make this connection. The principle of do no harm, it's much more negative, and the principle of doing, of caring, of caring for the other, is much more positive, I think. What they are trying to argue is that economies need to care for we need to produce through teaching economies that care more for society and for the societal problems that we all face. They also illustrate this with the trolley problem and how this could be brought into the classroom. So we need care because I think we need, although we do need responsibility as well. In a different paper, I'm making a distinction between responsibility and care. And I think this might be interesting just to point out that care is something that relates to those which are close to us, whereas responsibility is more global and encompasses care. So in a way, we do need responsibility as well as care and the do no harm to kind of succeed in our exercise, ethical exercise.
Thank you very much, Joanna. I think this was a very interesting conversation. We spoke with one of the editors of a book recently published by Routledge just in June 2019. This was The Ethical Formation of Economists, edited by Wilfred Dolsma and Joanna Negru. Thank you very much for your time. And also thanks to my second guest of today, Professor Rodrigo Zeitan from New York University in Shanghai, and in particular to Joanna Negru, which is reader in economics at Lucian Blaga University in Sibiu, Romania. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much for the invitation, Andrea.
New Books in Economics, brought to you by EAEPE, the European Association for Evolutionary Political Economy.